And since we don't have a quorum, as our first presenter, we will go, Representative Portman, are you prepared to present your bill?
I am prepared.
Thank you, Representative Portman. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes. I would like to move that House File 639 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Transportation Finance Committee.
Division, right?
Division.
Division, yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I drafted this bill to do two different things. One is to change the scope of what MnDOT considers its organizing mission, and two, to authorize the development of a strategic plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector. I just passed out information to members of the committee, and we'll put the extras out here for the public, that show in Minnesota, the largest emitter of greenhouse gases is the transportation sector. Many of the proposals moving through the legislature this year focus on the electricity generation part of the greenhouse gas emissions puzzle. And that is a significant part, but even if we were to all switch to wind-powered energy and solar panels, we would still have two-thirds of the greenhouse gas emissions. Transportation is about a third. And the PCA has developed estimates of how much greenhouse gas we're emitting in our transportation sector by looking at the cars in the fleet and, how many vehicle miles traveled per year per person, those type of things. I think given the magnitude of the emissions that are coming from the transportation sector, we have to look at getting a handle on these emissions, or we're not really doing all we can to solve the problem. I've spoken with the Center for Transportation Studies, and they are very interested in doing this strategic plan and in working with MnDOT. They have a great working relationship with MnDOT and have indicated that in other areas where they are tasked to work with MnDOT and MnDOT has the funding for their studies, that that works very well. So there are a couple changes I need to make to the bill. There's a couple pieces that start with policy, and that is in changing the MnDOT mission of the agency to look at more environmental considerations. But then really what I consider to be equally as weighty part of the bill is the strategic plan, and that's described on lines 4.16 and to the end of the bill. And my suggestion is that the Center for Transportation Studies take the lead on developing this strategic plan. The aim of this strategic plan would be to figure out if there are things that we can do to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector 30% by 2030. Ethanol alone is not enough. If we all switch to ethanol in our cars, we wouldn't be able to make that. We have to look at some innovative things, including the way that we plan projects. So the couple of amendments that I need to make are at, in the section 6, the appropriation language.
Do we have those amendments?
No, they're both going to be oral amendments.
Okay.
Where there's an ellipse right now and there is no dollar amount, I would like to include $500,000. This line 5.19, after the dollar sign, insert $500,000. And at the end of line 5.19 would be for the transportation or the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota.
I'm sorry, Representative, could you?
I'll repeat that. At the end of line 5.19, add the words for the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota.
Representative Portman, as soon as the quorum is available, we can vote on that. Do you want to go on with more description of your bill, or?
Is there any questions?
Do we have any questions from the committee members?
And I think maybe Minda has something to say about it. I originally had anticipated this bill might be heard next week, and so I haven't spoken to them about it yet.
Well, I guess we do, Representative Portman, we do have enough people for a quorum at this point, so I guess we can go ahead and vote on the amendment, the oral amendment. So can I, do you need to read it back? Matt, if you, sorry, Burgess, if you could please go ahead and read that amendment back to us so we can vote.
Madam Chair, members, the amendment to House File 639 is as follows. Page 5, line 19, insert 500,000 in the blank. Page 6, line 20, before 4, insert for the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, we don't have a page 6.
Page 5. Page 5, line 20.
Insert.
I'll repeat that second one, sorry. Page 5, line 20, before 4, insert for the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Minnesota.
All right, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes.
So I bring my motion to pass the bill and re-refer it to Transportation Finance Division.
Yes. Any questions from committee members? And is there any testimony from the audience? Either for or against this bill? Hearing none? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Those opposed? All right. Passes up then.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Portman. All right, now we are. Okay. Representative Hausman, are you prepared to discuss your bill? And I also ask for someone who might like to approve the minutes here from Wednesday, March the 7th.
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are passed. Thank you. All right, Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, I would move House File 1529. I have amendments. Mm-hmm.
And your amendment? Do we have that?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move the DE1 amendment, and that is that's just to get the bill before you as we would like to discuss it.
Okay. Is there any discussion to the amendment? I'm sorry, Representative, please bear with me. Well, was there any discussion? Would you like to discuss the amendment?
Well, this is just to amend it so that it is in the form we want to present it to the committee.
Okay. All right. So at this point now, then, we'd like to move the amendment H1529DE1 to House File 1529. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill has four sections, two sections related to hours of service and safety, one section related to promoting the use of environmental equipment, and one section related to road waste and efficiency. And John Hausladen, President of Minnesota Trucking Association, will talk to you about the bill.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, I'm John Hausladen, President of the Minnesota Trucking Association. The bill we have before you is a bill that our industry has requested to be brought forward, and we appreciate Representative Hausman doing that for us. We like to call it our C-Trucks bill. It's a bill that deals with safety, efficiency and environmental responsibility. And it has four parts, and I'll just walk through them very quickly. The first part, federal regulations were changed just a handful of years ago that require truck drivers to be in their trucks, in their sleeper cabs, for up to 10 hours, or a minimum of 10 consecutive hours. Right now, the rest stops have a prohibition that say after 6 hours, a truck needs to move along. So, of course, the truck driver is then faced with either breaking the federal regulation and getting on the move, or staying in the rest area and breaking what the state requires. So this just brings it into consistency there, and it allows drivers to get the rest that they need to be safe behind the wheel. The second provision deals with the weight of vehicles on paved county highways, and this is specifically dealing with the county system. And right now, there's in state law a rather old cap of 73,280 pounds on 9-ton roads, and this gets to be a little bit of inside baseball, but technically, if you take the formula of how you weigh the truck, how you space the axles, and the formula that the engineers use, you actually can run an 80,000-pound vehicle on a 9-ton road. They're designed for that. But there's an archaic cap of 73,280 that still exists in statute. So all this does is eliminate that cap and allow vehicles to go to their maximum weight. It does not increase the allowable weights. It just allows the vehicles to go to their max based on the design of the road. So that's the second provision. Third provision deals with auxiliary power units, which are idle reduction technologies. And in the energy bill that Congress passed, they allow trucks on the interstate system to put these units on. They're like little mini generators, and that weighs about 400 pounds. Well, if you put a generator on, that's 400 pounds of freight you can't move. So what Congress said was, okay, we want to give you the ability to not lose that weight, so you can exceed the maximum weight on the interstate system by 400 pounds. But they made that language permissive, not required or mandatory, and so for the state to allow trucks to take advantage of that, Minnesota must adopt that as well. So that is the third provision. And fourthly is a small provision dealing with well drillers, and it adopts a provision of the federal law relative to hours of service and allows well drillers, after they've taken 24 hours off, to start working again as opposed to 34 hours. And this again makes Minnesota consistent with the federal regulation. So those are the four provisions. And again, these are provisions that make our industry more safe, efficient, and environmentally friendly. And we would urge your support as we support this as well. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Houseladen.
Yes.
Are there private rest area, travel rest area centers, or whatever you call them, that are under contract that you'd have to provide to extend the hours also, or is this strictly public ones?
This is dealing just strictly the public.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Houseladen, is that a problem? Not. I'm just curious. Are there other centers? The distribution or the distance between, sometimes is that a problem or not?
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, there are ongoing discussions about the location and number of rest areas for trucks, absolutely. And it depends on time of day and season of the year, obviously. What we're dealing with, of course, deals just with the public rest areas and has no impact on the private. The private can determine how long they want trucks to be there on their own.
Any other questions from committee members? Are there any other testifiers to hear to testify for this bill? Seeing none, then, Representative Hoffman, do you want to renew?
Madam Chair, I made the motion and was looking for guidance about the appropriate way to conclude that motion in terms of referral. To Transportation Finance?
Yes, that's correct.
I'll renew my motion that House File 1529 be passed and re-referred to Transportation Finance.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the vote goes. Thank you very much. Okay. Chair Hornstein.
Thank you.
As Representative Hornstein gets his materials ready, we're going to be hearing House File 673. Welcome to your committee, Representative
Hornstein. Thank you. This is the first. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 673 for re-referral to the Transportation Finance Committee for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill.
All right. Okay. Representative Hornstein?
Members, this is a bill I presented earlier this session, passed with good support in the Local Government Committee, and it's coming to the Transportation Committee because it has very important implications for transportation in our state. This relates to the recent agreement between the Metropolitan Airports Commission and the airlines concerning lease agreements. And members, the reason I'm bringing this bill forward is that this agreement took place without a lot of public scrutiny within the MAC, again, and many of you have heard my other bill related to the MAC concerning how difficult it is to get to the meetings. That's not our discussion today, but we're very concerned that this agreement has profound implications for the state. There's $248 million involved in revenues, and there's really been little consultation with the public and certainly formally with the legislature about this agreement. So all this bill simply says, and it's, you know, one of those six-liners, if there's a agreement over if there's an agreement over $100 million, there should be legislative consultation. We are not going to have an agreement go through a process where we, you know, micromanage it, that we delete certain provisions and add certain provisions. We're simply reviewing a consultation process. And, you know, at the end of the day, we can vote up or down on the agreement. Or what I hope would happen, provide some feedback, provide some advice, and then the parties can go and, you know, choose to listen to us or not. But it's very, very important that we, the elected representatives of our constituents, have an opportunity to view agreements that are of this importance. And I'll just simply conclude by saying, you know, one of the reasons I'm involved in, you know, there's many, which I'll just outline as well. We have in my district a lot of concerns about noise. And there were some provisions related to noise in an original agreement between the MAC and Northwest, which disappeared, you know, a couple weeks later. There was a preliminary agreement, then the noise provisions disappeared. The noise provisions simply said that should be a part of the discussion. It didn't stipulate a specific amount of money that we have a whole long conversation going on between neighbors of the airport and the MAC concerning their what we believe are pretty clear commitments when the airport was going to stay in its present location versus going out to Dakota County or Xanthi County or wherever it was going to go, that neighbors of the airport would receive compensation for to insulate their homes for noise. And we believe those commitments haven't been fulfilled. But nonetheless, and this is much more than just noise, we just wanted that as part of a conversation piece. And even that was taken out. Basically, if you boil down the legalese, it says it's a conversation piece if we want it to be, which is very little comfort to us neighbors of the airport. But it's more than that. Where is this $240 million going to come from? Your constituents parking at the airport, your constituents eating at the airport, and when you only get peanuts on that flight from New York to Minneapolis to New York, you want to stop by at many of the fine eateries at the airport, but I think we may be paying $10 for that tuna salad sandwich as a result of this agreement. So there are a lot of implications to it, and you know, I just I would be happy to entertain questions and ask for support. Again, this could be a very, very long hearing. I think we can really boil it down to just a few issues, and those are the ones I've outlined for you.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Holbrook?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hornstein, I had the pleasure of hearing this bill, and local government didn't support it then. Don't support it
well,
now.
Well, she said pleasure, Madam.
I liked your six-liner bill, and I heard that one here before. But we talked about the term of 6 months and what happens when the legislature adjourns in May and doesn't come back until February or March. I mean, I just, even if I loved the policy, I'm not sure that it worked. And then we had some discussion relative to the $100 million and how it related to the length of the contract and then the fact that some of these items that you spell out actually cause revenues to go up and down and offset each other and how that was figured. Have you thought any more about those concerns? Just to, I mean, if I did like the policy, I would think you'd want to at least address those issues.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Holbrook, I think that the timing question is a very good one. It's valid. I would hope that, you know, once we're able to, you know, conclude our conversations about this bill and, you know, That could, I think, provoke a conversation within the MAC, you know, regarding maybe some of the concerns. You know, maybe they could, if it's, they would certainly have the option of lowering the, you know, the amount of aid. And I think $100 million is still a pretty good, you know, it's a lot of money. And, you know, if it's under $100 million, you know, they're exempt from this entirely. So, but I hope that through the process some of these concerns can be addressed. But if not, then we'll have to take a look at it in February or even the interim. You know, would be a possibility.
Representative Holbrook, are you?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hornstein. The airport's kind of a complex place, obviously, and I know we've had some hearings about the accessibility and those. I'm just wondering, in terms of how many, in this agreement that's been struck, how many different entities are involved in that, and are they, and two-part question, Madam Chair, it would be how many, and are they under contract now, and is there a jeopardy of that thing, whole thing breaking down? Could you go over that a little for us?
Madam Chair, Representative Severson, the agreement is between all of the carriers, but let's make no mistake about it, Northwest is the primary carrier. Northwest is the primary beneficiary of this agreement, and I believe it was, you know, part and parcel, you know, they're the main parties, really, to this. And, you know, It's an updated, and I think the MAC is here, they may testify, but there's an updated, it's updating, I think, some current agreements. It's not a new situation. This involves leases, landing fees, gate fees, things of that nature, things that are already in place. But my understanding is it renegotiates this for 15 years, and I think the total package is something like $279 million, and then of which, you know, Northwest would benefit in the $245 million range, something of that nature.
Thank
you. It's not new, there may be some new policies within those leases, but it's not a new phenomenon.
Representative Nelson, you have did not? Okay. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I've been getting a bunch of calls from people who don't like the fact that the University of Minnesota is showing in their series of plays over there, The Pope and the Witch. And they want me to see about withholding, and I'm not going to go into the background of that, but some Catholics are outraged about the play. And be that as it may, they want me to see about withholding money from the university. And I tried to tell them that we kind of let them operate for good or for bad, mostly for good, in their individual and autonomous way. And I have felt over the years that they occasionally do missteps, but get along pretty well. On the other hand, the Mac has occasionally maybe made a little one side way or the other that I might not agree with, but by and large, I think they pretty well manage the efforts of the airport. And I kind of hate to get in there and start micromanaging. We don't even know what the hell the process was that they went through to arrive at the decision that they've that we're talking about specifically here. And we do often allow groups of experienced people to run various endeavors, and I think that we have a good crew that has been working over the years to keep our airport in airports in good working order. So I wouldn't think without a lot of delving into this that we would want to take any adverse action to hamper their movements. And we're not, you maybe went into much detail about this in the local government, but we certainly haven't here. And I don't know that most people in this room know of whatever negotiations came about to arrive at their decision. So I can't see that we should move ahead with this.
Representative Hornsey?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, I think that you precisely identified one of my concerns. You said, we don't know the process. And that's a very important point. We don't know the process by which a very large sum, again, not even though MAC has taxing authority, this isn't necessarily directly tax money, but it's public money. It's a public entity that the legislature created, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, now moving towards, you know, a subsidy, a large subsidy of a private entity, which has all kinds of implications economically, financially, environmentally. You know, I was just handed today, I got new information today. I've been following this very closely. Someone, you know, I get information passed out December 18th at the Metropolitan Airports Commission that talks about a MAC excess cash, i.e. profit, has grown 240% in the past 10 years. And now they're asking for hundreds of millions of more money. This is important public information that, again, hasn't, you know, it's only seen the light of day because we're having a hearing on it today. So there's a lot of important information that I think we're not receiving. And all we're saying here is consultation with the legislature. There's a long history of legislative branch, you know, advice and consultation types of arrangements, both in Washington and here in St. Paul, that don't involve micromanaging, you know, a private entity. But, you know, I think we have, if the system is broken at the MAC, then, you know, we ought to be able to be engaged in it.
Okay. Representative Ruth?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, with all due respect, Mr. Chair, I do feel it makes it really difficult for MAC to operate. But I'm just curious, are there any other states that have done this? Where this idea came from? Or are we trying to set a new precedent here?
Representative Hornstein?
Madam Chair, Representative Ruth, I'm not aware of other states that have similar arrangements with the legislature, but, you know, there are not a lot of other states that have, they have airport authorities, whether they were created by the legislature and have some direct accountability. They don't have, I don't think there's many states that have quite that same system that we have. Again, the MAC was created in the 1940s by the legislature, so it's a creature of us. We've delegated responsibility to them, as I think we properly do, and I think Representative Earhart made a good point about that it's a well-managed facility. We understand that. I mean, you know, I think accepting the, you know, complete disregard for the communities around it in terms of commitments to noise. I mean, on a day-to-day basis, you know, planes arrive and depart. They did a great job during the recent storm. So, you know, we have no complaints about that. But, again, I think there is this relationship between you know, a primary carrier and the MAC that has gotten to the point where it needs some scrutiny and some accountability.
Representative Hausman. Okay. All right, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're not asking for consultation. You're asking in this bill, if I'm reading it, to specifically approved and authorized in advance. Now, that's micromanaging if I ever read it. Not just asking for consultation. It's saying, we want to make the decision. We want to put all your professionals aside that have been doing this for years and make the decision for you.
Representative Hornstein?
Look, unless the agreement is specifically approved and authorized in advance by the legislature in law, we are simply saying, show us the agreement, thumbs up or thumbs down. It could be done in a week. It could be done in the interim. If we can massage this language to the point, Representative Earhart, it's not so rigid, but it does maybe get into the spirit of advice and consent. I'm very open to that, and I'd have to come up with some language that would appear to provide a little more flexibility. I think you and Representative Holbrook have maybe identified an issue here. But, you know, the broader concept that I really want, Madam Chair and members, to really consider is, you know, how important that there has been a breakdown in the system here with this agreement, and I think certainly with some other agreements that the MAC has had around noise. And we need to be involved now as elected officials. And for me, and let me finish, Representative, we had a memorandum of understanding agreement approved by the MAC in mid-January. While not perfect, while we would have certainly a lot of concerns about, at least even address the issue of noise. 2 weeks later, what happened in those 2 weeks? I didn't see a big public meeting. I didn't see documents being distributed. I didn't see a public conversation. And 2 weeks later, that very critical provision is gone. And this is not a matter to be taken lightly. And again, I think a lot of unanswered questions about the revenue and where that comes from. Is it going to come from our constituents' pocketbooks? They talk about accounting improvements and this kind of thing. And I think, members, we all know what that may or may not mean. I think there's problems with this. There's so many problems that I think it's prompted many of us to take a good look at this and have some more legislative conversation and hearings and oversight. And I'm certainly willing to look at the language that would appear to members, if it's rigid, to provide some flexibility. But that doesn't take away from the real need to do this.
Representative Holbrook.
I'm just wondering if the MAC's going to be allowed to respond to this at all. We had quite the hearing in local government. This is the Transportation Committee. And then another question for Representative Hornstein. Can you tell me the difference between approved and authorized? Or are we being redundant?
I think authorization is permissive. And then approve is, looking at the end product, and that there may be we may need just one of those A words. I'm not sure.
Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, I know you love government and like to have as much of it as possible, but if I can get rid of a few words in the statute book, I'm happy.
Lines 13 and 14 clearly are. I will commit to this committee. We're able to move on to really look at altering those, maybe providing a little more flexibility there.
Representative Severson, and then we'll move on to
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg asked my questions.
Oh, thank you. Then is there somebody else that would like to speak to this bill?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
While the MAC is coming down to the table, I just want to comment. I've been taking this opportunity whenever the smoke comes into this room to let people know that smoking right to the south of the state office building and right to the north of the state office building invites the members who meet in committee in this room to participate in your smoke break with you. And I don't enjoy being part of the staff and members' smoke breaks, so just if you could observe now that the air intake system is bringing your smoke into our room, please refrain from smoking in those areas. We would appreciate it.
And Madam Chair, as the author of the smoking ban bill, I would say that there is no ventilation that actually gets rid of secondhand smoke.
Thank you very much, members. I'm not sure legislatively how we're going to handle that for the minutes, but we'll see what we can do. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Hamill. I'm the executive for the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Happy to be here today to respond to Representative Hornstein's bill. We have some thoughts I'd like to share with you. With me today is Tom Anderson, the Commissioner's General Counsel. And Tom will talk with you very briefly after I get introductory remarks. First of all, we are here before you today because of concerns about the most recent negotiations we've had with the airlines that serve the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. It's our lease agreement that lays out all of the financial matters that relate to airport-airline relationships. This negotiation has just been completed to develop a memorandum of understanding. The MOU is a document that lays out the negotiating parameters and the guidelines for the writing of the final lease documents. So the MOU, which will be provided at the end of the discussion today, is actually a couple of pages long. But the final agreement between the airline and the airlines that serve Minneapolis St. Paul Airport will be probably 3 to 4 inches thick documents. It's a substantial item. It's a year's negotiation and process. It's taken us a year to get to this point. We started in January of last year and we finished around the first part of February. It is virtually the creation of multiple various types of documents. In fact, the Commission retained the services of two nationally recognized financial consulting firms to develop a financial modeling process. We literally developed over two dozen various financial models to take a look at how the cash flow and the monies that the Airports Commission collects can be managed as part of the disagreement with the airline. So it's an awful lot of work and a great deal of time. The result is this memorandum of understanding, which has been, an object of significant scrutiny and, I think, good public review. For example, in the last 60 days prior to the Commission approving the MOU to move this process forward, we had a 2.5-hour meeting in December, a public meeting. We had 3 meetings in the month of January, and Representative Orenstein talks about when these languages all changed. During these 3-hour meetings, that's when the commissioners themselves argued and debated these issues, and language was changed from time to time. We had a final meeting in the first part of February, where the decision was made and the vote was taken to support and move the MOU onto the next stage. In addition to those 5 meetings in the last 60 days prior to the approval of this by the commission, we also had a variety of updates and meetings that were both public and private. And I say it that way because there was some public discussion, and when it became an issue of concern regarding confidentiality of some of the documents and so forth, the meeting was closed in compliance with Minnesota state law to discuss specific details. The meeting then opened again for a public vote. The bottom line is that there have been a good number of meetings and a good substantial scrutiny regarding these documents. More specifically, testifying before the commission on these matters were individual citizens, the chambers of commerce, members of city councils, airline representatives, tenants from our reliever airports testified in this process, and we had 2 visits out of the 5 meetings from the mayor of Minneapolis, Mayor Ryder. This is not a private, behind-the-scenes, closed-door, inaccessible process. Numerous individuals testified and participated in these discussions and contributed to the deliberations of the commission. In addition to just the public discussion, in the last 90 days, there have been over 40 newspaper articles in the Minneapolis and St. Paul newspapers regarding this specific discussion and this MOU initiative. And we basically believe this agreement is providing the commission and this community with the following 3 basic principles. 1, we're trying to lower the cost of the operation of the airport and lower the cost of government in Minnesota. 2, we're trying to protect the public's best interest in the process of working our way through the Northwest Airlines bankruptcy. And finally, we're trying to make the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport more competitive and provide more air service to more companies, providing travelers greater choices. The complexity of this process, as represented in this bill, would suggest that once we've gone through this lengthy process, and I'm going to ask Mr. Anderson to discuss in a moment, we then have to bring back this document, which is honestly going to be a 3 to 4 inch thick book. Looks like a legal book, a law book. And it's going to come back to you. And then you're going to have to go through that document and make certain determinations. And the what ifs, there are numerous what ifs, but one of the ifs that I would bring to you is, let's just say that we're in that negotiation process as we are right now. Let's say that that final document is finally written and completed and agreed upon by the parties involved, 29 airline companies plus the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and we have that thing all set to go in, say, mid-May. Or let's just make it the first part of May. We deliver that to the legislature, and now you've got, I think, a substantial amount of work, if in fact you're going to review and approve this document. It's going to take you, I think, a substantial amount of time just to get through the document and understand it. I would expect that we would be invited back to testify and answer questions you may have regarding certain bits of language and pieces of the document and its impact. In other words, you're going to have to lead yourself through the session into special session to approve this. Or we're going to have to wait until the next legislative session. And I have to tell you in all honesty, in the airport-airline relationship in our business, we can't wait 6 months or a year to get a document agreed upon for at least to determine rates and charges at the airport. The bottom line here, Madam Chair, is that it's a process that in our 64-year history at the MAC has been delegated to the Airports Commission by the legislature to negotiate these financial instruments. This is the business of airports. I'd like to ask Tom Anderson, our legal counsel, to kind of review with you just kind of the legal, technical aspects of what we've gone through over the last year. And I take a great deal of time to help you understand the gravity and the involvement that we have here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Anderson, General Counsel of the Airports Commission. The catalyst for these negotiations was the bankruptcy filing by Northwest Airlines in September 2005. But in fact, the negotiations soon encompassed a much larger set of objectives and concerns. If you just look at page 3 of the handout that we provided, you look at the amount of turmoil in the airline industry since September 11th, and I think that's something that we all understand, but this puts it in very graphic terms, both in terms of the number of major airlines that have filed for bankruptcy since that time, including local airlines, Northwest, Mesaba, and Sun Country, and indeed the incredible roller coaster of earnings and losses that the industry has experienced throughout that time period. The economic realities of the airline industry pushed us into a fundamental reexamination of our financial relationship with the airlines. We have many airlines that serve the airport, dozens and dozens, but 29 of which have actually signed lease agreements with us, and we call them signatory airlines. And as Representative Hornsey indicated, Northwest is by far the largest of those airlines. But then, as we began to confront the issues that we were going to need to address with the filing in bankruptcy by Northwest, we saw some issues that we were going to need to confront that were fundamentally different than we've ever had to deal with. We have a lot of experience with bankruptcy over the years, going back since the airline deregulation. I've had to become an expert in the bankruptcy business as an airport attorney, as you might imagine, because of this, because of the complexity of those issues. But the issues with Northwest were fundamentally different in several ways. First of all, and that forced us to consider some of the objectives we were trying to accomplish in these negotiations. The first set of those objectives were financial. We didn't think it made sense to look at any sort, we looked at any sort of agreement with Northwest as being the solution to all of our problems. We felt it was important to look at some fundamental restructuring of our relationship with all the airlines that serve. If we simply dealt with the bankruptcy process and our rights in bankruptcy, in the Northwest bankruptcy, we would not have the ability to deal with all the other airlines that we regulate as well. In addition, there were key financial protections that we do not have today that we felt it was important to gain as part of these negotiations. And so it became very critical to us to figure out what those objectives needed to be and to work those into the negotiation process. So there were financial objectives. There were legal objectives as well. In bankruptcy, airlines, Any company has the ability to restructure its financial arrangements, and in particular, as it relates to the airport, an airline or any tenant has the right to reject the leases that it has with the landlord, that landlord being us, the Metropolitan Airports Commission. So, in the case of the Northwest bankruptcy, they have the right to either assume or reject literally a dozen of different leases that they have with us. And so our goals were to try to figure out how we could move to a situation where we could not leave that issue simply to the vagaries of the bankruptcy process, but attempt to proactively and negotiate the outcome of these various transactions. So that clearly was one of our key objectives, is this, to get an understanding from Northwest as to which of these agreements it was going to reject and which it was going to assume. Two of them in particular are ones that have received a great deal of legislative attention. But many of you will recall, some of you were here in 1991 when the legislature directed the Airports Commission to do what has been variously characterized as the state financing, the MAC loan. It culminated in a $315 million financing package that between MAC and the airport that was directed by the legislature. Very unique arrangements. And that created some very special problems for us in bankruptcy in terms of how that debt and that lease, those lease arrangements were going to be treated by the bankruptcy court. So we felt it was critical as part of this negotiation process that we come to a detailed understanding with Northwest as to how those financial arrangements were going to be treated in bankruptcy. Many legal issues primarily tied to the Northwest bankruptcy proceedings, which we are in the middle of, and at which, as you know, Northwest is hoping to exit in the second quarter of 2007. Third, we saw operational objectives that we were trying to accomplish. We have a need to promote competition at the airport. One of the things we could do as part of this process was obtain Northwest support for releasing its hold on certain gates that we felt would be important in the event other airlines want to increase their presence in our community. And so that was clearly one of the objectives we sought and, in fact, obtained as part of these negotiations. And finally, as a result of very specific input from our board and very public input, which some of you may have read about, we felt it was important to strengthen the public policy commitments that Northwest is, in particular, is making our community, to keep a hub in this community and to keep its headquarters in this community. And so as part of these negotiations, those were included, and as Representative Hornstein indicated, a discussion about noise and how that fit into this transaction came as well, and there was a compromise reached after a committee recommendation that addressed the noise issue as well. So all those objectives really were the guiding principles that we used to get into this year-long negotiation. And I will not go into the specifics unless you wish at this point. Certainly we're prepared to provide that at any point if someone wants. But I think the remaining pages give you an outline of the results of this negotiation. If you look at, there's been a lot of discussion, and of course it's quite accurate that this involves a reduction in the rent that the carriers are expected to pay to the Airports Commission. If you look on page 4, you'll see a summary of that. You see in the blue diamond line, under the current rate-making methodology, the amount of rent that the airlines pay, and you'll see that the new proposal reduces that rent, especially in the first 10 years of the agreement, by approximately 11% in total, and then essentially reverts back to a level approximately similar to the result today. But in the key point to us, it does it in a way that was very important for us by guaranteeing all the costs at the airport. And again, I will not go into the details of that unless the committee wishes. There was also a fair amount of discussion about concessions revenue and sharing concessions revenue, and that, of course, is an element of Representative Hornstein's bill that triggers this provision. And I would just indicate, as shown on page 7, that the amount of revenue sharing is frankly quite modest in relation to the total amount of concession revenue that the airport generates, under 10%, approximately 8% of the total concession revenue, whereas many airports share literally 100% of their concession revenue with the airlines. That's a model at many airports. We have felt it's important to retain that, and so we made a modest, if you will, move in that direction by sharing of approximately 8% of the concession revenue. The bottom line is indicated on page 8, that one of the principal goals of this negotiation from our board's perspective was to lower our cost to the airlines, and we believe we've done that. And you can see from the charts, we've moved perhaps modestly, but moved definitely in the direction that far right bar indicates where our cost per passenger, which is the measure that airports use to determine their cost to the airlines, the cost per plane passenger. We are able to move that essentially from the far left bar, where it says MSP 2007, to the far right bar, and we think position ourselves favorably with the other airports. So those were the general goals that we were trying to accomplish in the negotiations, and as Mr. Hamill indicated, it took over a year to accomplish it, even as a matter of general principle. And now the hard work becomes of turning that brief memorandum of understanding into binding legal documents, which now we're in the process of doing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. We have a lot of questions here from the committee, so we'll start with Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I was a little skeptical about the bill at first, but I have a comment and a question. What I really didn't like was hearing the representative of the MAC talk about how he envisioned this, if this bill became law, how he envisioned the process working. Is it for months you're working with the airline, you come to an agreement, and then you plunk a 6-inch document down on our desk the first week in May, and you think, well, we're not going to get to process it until the next January. I think what Representative Hornstein is trying to get at here is a process whereby the MAC's not out there doing its thing for months and months without any public input or discussion. I think if the MAC wanted to get an agreement approved and authorized by the legislature in a timely manner, the MAC would have to be informing the legislature as the negotiations were going forward. We would be more involved. We would know what was going on. And to think that the way that the process would work if this bill became law is that you'd be doing your thing and just show up with a really fat document would be exactly the problem. I mean, so that's my comment. I really found that characterization offensive. My question is, how many contracts do you enter into that are $100 million?
Well, Madam Chair, this is it. There's no question that this bill would be targeted to the one negotiation that we have now.
We're talking about one agreement.
That's my assessment.
Thank you.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a senior moment. I know what it was now. Came back. Mr. Hamill, I guess the question I would have, Representative Hornstein talked about an agreement that was brought out in the committee meetings or the community meetings in January and how that disappeared in the process. Perhaps you could explain a little bit of that.
If I may, Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, I also think Representative Ortman, let me just kind of blend this all together because there's a rationale for the comment. I'm disappointed that I offended you. I didn't mean to do that. The process is such that these are pretty intense negotiations. And there is significant detail where in this particular negotiation, we considered a complete restructuring of the financial methodology, that is the rate-making operation of the airport, to determine if, in fact, another way of calculating our financial rates and charges of the airlines would be an improved situation for both the airlines and for the Metropolitan Airports Commission. So we spent months running financial models. This is the level of kind of the detailed scrutiny that would not be brought to you for deliberations, kind of how it goes, because we quite frankly don't know what to communicate to you yet. And quite frankly, couldn't bring it to our own board with a lot of detail either. It was just kind of the grunt work that goes on behind the scenes in preparation for kind of coming down to certain conclusions. And in fact, the reason why there was an intensity of public meetings in December and January with a decision on the first part of February is because it took us from January or February of 2006 until December to get all the package information together, and then with some intensity provided the briefings to our commission and to the public at the same time, which would have been the time we would have had materials ready for a presentation to the legislature as well, and then through a series of 5 intense public discussions, deliberation and decisions were made. So it's not one of those processes where you take a little step and then report, and take another step and report. We looked at almost 2 dozen different financial models over the course of the 10 months or so of and quite the last 6 months of heightened negotiation. it's not quite as building and as slow a process. It's looking at different routes and directions and then coming back and retracting and saying, well, can we tweak it here or there? We did not have a document to present until the very end of November, early December. Then we hit that presentation with intensity and decisions were made. And certain things were changed as part of that presentation, deliberation, part of the public process. So it's not a slow feeding process. It's a pretty intense one that kind of delivers the concepts at the end of a long process of discussion. Did that answer your question, Representative? I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, no. No, specifically, I think Representative Hornstein was talking about an issue where the community was able to have some feedback in the noise abatement issue.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering, from the time that he was talking about in January until the time that the agreement was made, what transpired in that process?
Yeah. Representative Hornstein is correct. There was language that was provided and presented to the committee, one of the committees of the commission. It went through that committee process with a committee vote. It was then brought to the full commission, and the full body modified that language as part of the normal deliberative process, and then was approved by the full commission and moved on with altered or changed noise mitigation language. But it was discussed. The public did attend and did participate in those discussions, both at the committee level and at the full commission board decision-making level.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to kind of a follow-up, the reason I had that senior moment is I was just picturing the 4-inch document that Representative Portman was talking about. It's typically the Health and Human Services bill on the 1st of, you know, actually it's about the 15th of May.
Thank you very much, Representative Susan. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm almost afraid to answer a question. I'm hoping that the answer will be concise. Sometimes you guys are your own worst enemies. Talk to me about the time frame, and my understanding of a large component of this is you were afraid what the bankruptcy courts were going to do with the 91 agreement and what payments to the state may have been totally lost as a result of a judge liquidating or ruling that they didn't have to pay the debt in bankruptcy. So talk to me how that situation works in with your 6-month time frame in this bill, and would in fact, under this scenario, were it to happen again, hopefully it doesn't, would you might lose the opportunity to negotiate a money saving you kind of were gambling here from what I understood, that you might win more or lose depending on what the bankruptcy judge. So how does, if this situation were to replicate itself, how does the 6-month time frame work relative to that?
A company in bankruptcy has a tremendous amount of cost associated with that bankruptcy, and of course the goal is to get out of bankruptcy as quickly as possible. It's very specific to the Northwest bankruptcy in this case that their goal is to get out of bankruptcy, and they're saying publicly that they hope to be out by the end of the second quarter of this year, June 30th. That would be then. So the timing as it relates to this particular issue is if we're not able to reach agreement with them in advance of that time, and they decide it's important for them to go ahead and exit bankruptcy, they have alternatives rather than reaching agreement with us. They have rights in bankruptcy that they can exercise, and so they would exercise those rights, I presume, if they felt they were not able to reach agreement with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sometimes look at a bill like this and wonder about the motivation that brought it here. And as I look at these authors, I can understand these are close neighbors. And they probably have even different issues than I have, but what opens my mind to this and makes me emotionally supportive of a bill like this is what seems to be our commitment time and again as a state, as a legislature, as MAC, to our biggest partner there, Northwest Airlines. And I think we've been good partners. And I think we've rushed to their defense and we've helped. but in the last year or so, what seemed like a convenient filing of bankruptcy before the rules changed and then using that bankruptcy process to really cause all of the people that we represent to lose their jobs and those who are left to just be paid a percentage, a small percentage of what they were paying, we start to lose faith, and we wonder if this is just a one-way street, this respect and partnership. And so I put myself then in the minds of these authors, and because now it's not just that airline, but it is the MAC, and I have heard them bring bills about accessible public meetings, etc., all of which seem to be opposed by the MAC. And so, again, we're asked to be loyal partners in what is a very important part of our state, that airport. But that respect and loyalty is kind of a two-way street. And of all this conversation, can you acknowledge, that there might have been a way you could have avoided this bill? Could there have been something along the line that you could have brought to the table that might have avoided this bill?
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Representative Hausman, the Metropolitan Airports Commission it has been a fairly consistently newsworthy organization. And the reason why we are frequently finding ourselves in the midst of controversy, whether it is imams being denied flights on airliners or noise challenges and mitigation by our neighbors around the community and the community adjacent to the airport, or all the things that you read here about the relationship between MAC, Economist Airlines, the legislative body, this program auditor a couple of years ago, all of these things we believe come our way because, quite frankly, we are involved in a lot of controversial issues. And this is another example of the controversial issue coming before MAC and becoming an issue of the legislature. I'm not going to sit here in front of you today and tell you that $100 million or $279 million is not a lot of money. It's a tremendous amount of money. In maybe our world of large airports around the country, it's part of the normal course of negotiation, but it is still a lot of money and it's all public money. Northwest Airlines has had its challenges. I happen to believe that Northwest, and I won't speak on behalf of the airline, they're here, they can speak for themselves, but as an observer who's close to them, both in controversy and contesting their decisions as well as working with them trying to cooperate, I believe that they genuinely tried to avoid bankruptcy, and they held out as long as they possibly could, and they took some pretty drastic actions with their employees and all of their vendors to try to avoid, and then once in bankruptcy, try to recover from bankruptcy and be successful. Because at the end of the day, I believe, and I think they believe, that their success is important to the economic strength of our community. Noise mitigation and noise abatement issues are highly controversial. In the last 3 or 4 years, the Commission has taken action, which has angered citizens. That's why we have two major pieces of litigation against the Commission at the present time, because citizens believe that MAC did not fulfill its full obligation as far as noise mitigation. And I think the representative Ornstein, that's part of his motivation, whether it's blatant or out front or not. I think his concern about how it is that we can provide a refund or a rebate or a reduced cost to the airlines totaling $279 million and not dedicate some of those dollars or all of those dollars to noise mitigation in the community. I think, and I understand his position. I understand why those folks are supportive of this. I would simply tell you that we're an agency that does get involved in decision making. We truly try to find the most reasonable and appropriate course of action. We try to be responsible in the way we manage our facilities. We are recognized. I don't want to sound boastful, but I will tell you that we're recognized around the country as being one of the better run airports in the country. We have stepped up and done things other airports have not done. We are the nation's leader in noise mitigation, bar none. That's flat and understood across this nation. But it does lead to controversy. And it leads to dealing with citizens and interest groups and airlines and airports, and it's highly, highly visible and gets contentious at times. And so I guess I'm trying to tell you in response that we're visible, we make decisions, we have to move forward and act. We spent $3 billion expanding the airport and growing it with new runways and so forth to prepare our community for the future, the next 15 to 20 years of operations and growth. That is just a lot of activity taking place and trying to serve the community. We're trying to do the best we can, but it is controversial. Could we have done it better? The answer is yes. There's always a better... particularly when we're here speaking to all these bills. For example, the public meeting bill, which is not discussed today. we're working diligently and trying to find some way to accommodate public meetings, either security but not requiring the passengers to go through all the scrutinizing, or pull them out of the and put them in a public venue where they're easily accessible and people can attend them on a regular basis. We know we have to do that. And we're not resisting that. It's just how you do it and where you do it. But there is a better way to do this.
Thank you, Mr. Hamill. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was regarding bankruptcy, and you answered that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, at this point, we do have another bill to hear, so unless there is members... Oh.
I just want to make very brief concluding comments, and I do appreciate, Mr. Hamill and I disagree on an awful lot of things, but the door's always open, and we have a good a relationship, and we try to work things out. I'll just say just very briefly in conclusion, and this is just an example. The MAC seems to be doing pretty well. This was just handed to me, and I'm not going to hand it out because I haven't had a chance to really talk about this with Mr. Hamill or others, but MAC excess cash IE profit has grown 240% in the past 10 years. Northwest is now turning a profit. This issue of, the lease and its relationship to bankruptcy, I mentioned in the government committee, that I think that the profitability of the airline industry, there's many, many factors. Some of it has to do with what's going on in the Shanghai Stock Exchange on any given day, or even today we have, the market goes down yesterday 240 points because of issues in the subprime lending, and I'm not bringing in the predatory lending issue now to the committee.
Thank you.
But we have variability in costs of fuel, and that's an OPEC decision or something on the mercantile exchange. There are so many factors. I believe these leases are relatively small in terms of really the economics of the airline industry, and of course we've heard all about the labor issues, and I know there's a lot of anger among Northwest employees about it. So I just wanted to quickly respond to that, and I'll just say, members, this isn't one of these bills. I don't know if Mr. Shetman's in the room, but this isn't one of these bills where I can say, we've kind of worked it out. Matt's fine with it, and this never was going to be one of those bills. We always have those kind of things where there's some disagreements, but they're fine with it. But I will commit this to you. I heard concerns about lines 13 and 14, and we have a week before we mark up this this bill. And I will. I don't expect to have agreement from the MAC on this, but I certainly would want to consult with some of the members on this on the committee that expressed concerns about this. Maybe work with Mr. Burris to get some language that isn't quite as rigid, but still really preserves what I think is a very, very important intent of this bill, which is legislative review of these agreements. So, good hearing. I really appreciate the members' questions, and with that, I'm fine.
We have Representative Leader, then okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering what the motion was or what's going to happen to this bill. I'd just like to make a comment, perhaps if it's.
I think
I'd like to know what's.
Yeah.
Where it's going.
Well, my understanding, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, is that there will be an omnibus transportation policy bill, and that will be then approved by the full Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. So the motion would be to move the bill to the full committee with possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation policy bill.
Madam Chair, if I could amend the motion, say without recommendation, because I, frankly, Representative Hornstein, I think we need a little bit more testimony. I think it's a little convoluted, as I sit here, between probably mixing Northwest Airlines with the MAC, and I think it's mostly directed to Northwest Airlines, and that's my concern. I think we have an issue that we definitely should make certain we separate the issues, and just by listening to it, I think we should have further testimony prior to that time. So I'd like to see it if it moves. I don't know if you presume we're going to vote on it, but I think if we move it to the next committee, we should have it without recommendation.
To the author,
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. Clearly, I think that's a fair recommendation. We'll have a fuller discussion, in a week, and at that time, hopefully any issues that are outstanding that committee members want aired, and, I think we can do it at that time. So I would have no problem with that motion.
right, so with that then, Representative Hornstein, would you like to move your bill then to move to the Transportation Finance Policy Division without recommendation?
We don't have a policy division. It's finance.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Transportation Finance
Division. You're doing a good job.
Without, thank you. You have to give me a tough one here. All right, and Representative Holberg is gone, and she's usually very good at this. So so with that, then, all members in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries, then. Thank you. All right, next we have House File 1159, also by Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein, this bill is a little longer than six lines, so is that indicative of anything?
It's the end, Madam Chair, this is the inverse property of legislation.
Okay. Thank you.
That means that maybe the longer the bill, the less controversial the court of the hearing.
Thank you very much. Do you have testified?
So, yes.
Ready to move the bill?
Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 1159 as for re-referral to the Transportation Policy and Finance Division for inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill.
We do have an amendment here, Representative Hornstein.
Yes, this is an author's amendment, the A2 amendment, and I'll have Mr. Shetman from the Metropolitan Council explain the amendment and the bill.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Hornstein, for carrying the bill. What you have before you is the Met Council's transportation housekeeping bill. With the amendment that we just placed on the bill, what we do is that we delete Section 1, which has to deal with the appointment of the TAB chair. The Transportation Advisory Board asked the council to include this in our housekeeping bill. They came back, realized that there was a little bit more work that needed to be done, so we've just saved. They and the council have asked that we just repeal that section of this bill, and we're going to work on it and come back probably next year. The second portion of the bill, it deals with the council's performance audits. The current legislation requires that the council has a performance audit to be conducted every 4 years by an independent entity. What we're proposing a change to is to allow the council staff to perform this audit, which is more like an evaluation, and to sequence the audit so it's done prior to revision of the council's transportation policy plan. Just prior to this committee, Representative Hornstein and I were in the House Local Government Committee and Representative Filstrom's committee, and there were some questions about the audit, and I'd like to address them real briefly. Right now, the council is required by law to do these. I'm trying to see here. It's on page 2 of the bill, section 2, and what we have done in the past is that the council would then have an independent entity do this audit for us. We think that having the council staff do this bill is probably a better approach. There are some questions about a conflict of interest with the council doing our own audit. What we were doing prior to this is basically gathering the information, giving it to a consultant so they could turn around and give us back what we gave them and then give us a bill for it. We think that this is a better approach. One of the things that Representative Biskins raised, and I thought it was a very fair question, was I mentioned that the council would do a peer review of this audit to make sure that there was an independent body that was going to look at this. The council is happy to add language here, just basically requiring us to do a peer audit or evaluation if the committee would like. We intend to do that anyway, but if you'd like to have some comfort in that, we would be happy to include that as well. The next section of the bill I'm going to speak to is making an amendment to clarify some Metro Mobility statutory requirements. And we have worked closely with the State Council on Disability to work through these obsolete or necessary changes for that section of the bill. I know we've got a representative here from the Council on Disability to recognize that, yes, we are in total agreement on this. We think this is clearly housekeeping, and we don't think that there is any problem with that.
The last thing that I would like to speak to is included in the amendment that we passed. It is a repealer that I brought this up in Representative Hillstrom's committee just to make sure that they were aware of this. What we're doing is repealing an obsolete report. Back in 1987, I believe it was, there was legislation enacted saying that the council has to do a Metropolitan Agencies Consolidated Report. That, at that time, there were six regional agencies, which include the Parks and Open Space Commission, which currently exists, is now under the council, the regional, the RTB, the Regional Transit Board, which is now gone, the Metropolitan Waste Control Commission, which is now gone, and the council provides both of those functions, and the MAC and the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission. Those two entities, the MAC and the Sports Facilities Commission, basically maintain their own website. They put out these reports, and we just don't think it's necessary anymore to do these reports. I did speak with Deb Dyson and Gene Lefevre from House Research. They agree that this is obsolete, so we wanted just to make sure that that committee, since they were hearing that is informational, were comfortable with it. There was no objection to that in that committee, so we would like to put that amendment on this bill today. I'm happy to answer any questions. Again, I mentioned the State Council on Disability is here, and everything else we have, I think, is pretty kumbaya at this point.
Hey, any questions? Do we have any questions for the amendment? Representative Nelson?
Madam Chair, I have some concerns. I mean, I support this. I just have some concerns with auditing yourself, and I guess as we go forward, we can keep an eye on that to make sure, because I think somebody from the outside looking in on stuff and overlooking what's going on is a good thing.
Madam Chair.
Representative Horn.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Madam Chair, Representative Nelson. This came up just a couple hours ago. We had an informational hearing in local government, and Representative Bitskins flagged it immediately, and you know, we committed to him at that time that we would try to take care of this. I think it is a problem, and I acknowledge that, and we're going to have to find a better way to conduct these audits.
All right. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I did get a chance to talk with Representative Hornstein and Metropolitan Council Transit before this. Just before I came down to this meeting, found some interesting information. It kind of leads to Section 2 here in the particular bill in terms of self-audit. But there's a contract that has gone out for busing, and there is some question as to why a Minnesota company wasn't picked over a California company. And the bids were the same. In fact, you know, the information that I'm getting in, that it was actually lower than the California company. But I think there's some question as to the actual specifications and those things. And I think something like a Section 2 where they're doing a self-audit becomes problematic, because then you got the fox guarding the hen house here. And some of the things that I know that we are interested in here is making sure that, number one, that everybody's on a level playing field, and number two, that if there isn't a level playing field, that the Minnesota companies get the advantage. I mean, obviously we want to keep as much of that in Minnesota as we can, so I've got a commitment from the Metropolitan Transit Commission to come and talk with me about this issue, and I was just wondering in terms of when this would be heard on the omnibus write-up, because I would want to... This deal closes on the 28th, and I'd want to take action before that transpired so that we could actually get some, if it would require testifiers to come in and talk about this, to give the Transit Committee or the full Transportation Committee some kind of explanation on what went on. And I say this because I know that in the past, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when I in another deal with the City of St. Paul and another Minnesota-based company, it was kind of an under-the-hand under-the-table deal that went down, and that company ended up not getting the bid and ended up moving to Florida. So I've got some question as to, you know, how this whole process works, and I think we have an obligation to not just the people of Minnesota, but to the businesses of Minnesota, to try and keep those business and our business within the state. So I just say that to ask the question, when will this come up in terms of the full committee?
Representative Hornstein, do you?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, I just procedurally, I can answer that question, but then I think Mr. Shetman may be able to shed some light on the issue as well for the committee. But what we'll be doing is, a week from today, as you know, the deadline for bills to get out of a policy committee is a week from Friday.
Oh, no.
What?
Yeah, that's
Friday. Oh, I was worried I was wrong. But I better know these days. And so what we'll try to do then is mark up our omnibus bill in the full committee, not here, in a couple days next week, probably Thursday. If we need to take some committee time earlier than that, we'll do that. We'll plan that. But you can count on Thursday as sort of transportation policy day. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman? Chair Leader?
Representative Leader?
A week from Thursday. A week from tomorrow.
Representative Hornstein will shoot at that, yeah.
Yeah. And if we need, if it looks like we need some more committee time during the course of the week to mark up the policy bill, we will. And so that would be the procedural answer to your question. But Mr. Shetman can probably provide some more context to the issue here.
Great. Yes, and, thank you, Representative Hornstein, Madam Chair, and Representative Stevenson. What we're talking about in the bill is just an audit of our transit system. It's totally separate from our procurement, and so this particular piece doesn't affect that side of your comments. But
it could be amended.
But absolutely, that's the point, and that's the point I was going to make, and I also wanted to make sure that the committee was aware that Representative Stevenson did ask me before the hearing, and I just prior to sitting down here, I let him know that I've called my guys who make the decisions, and we will be making sure that we have those conversations with Representative Stevenson. So we've got lots of vehicles out there for you too. So but anyway, thank you very much, and I do believe
vehicles and buses.
Yes, vehicles and buses, and I we need a where's the rim track.
And I need to apologize. You know, this kind of caught me blindside beforehand, and I didn't mean to embarrass you or to call you out or anything. It's just, I think, just to get it out in the open, just so everybody knows.
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, thank you. And I mean, that's what this process is about. You flagged an issue, brought it to our attention, and hopefully we can address it. So, no need to apologize.
And I know you are a fair man.
Representative Portman, we need to vote on the amendment. Have you? Is this regarding the amendment, or can we
vote on
that?
No, we can vote on the amendment.
Okay. All those in Representative Hornstein, then?
I'll renew my motion to have the committee pass the A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment. Members in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the amendment passes then. Okay. Now we'll speak to the bill, and Representative Portman.
Yeah, I have a question about Section 2 also. Is this my concern is the fact that there's no set periodic time for the evaluation. That the previous times that were set in place were 97 and every 4 years thereafter, and then 99 and every 4 years thereafter. And
Madam Chair,
I also have a concern about it being not an independent entity. My concern is because the Metropolitan Council isn't elected, and so it's constrained by the governor's vision on transportation. And my concern is that we, if the report is done in-house, that we're going to be seeing the governor's in sort of influence on that.
Madam Chair and Representative Portman, I do appreciate your comments. In the Section 2 of the bill, it says prior to each major revision of the transportation policy plan, that happens every 4 years. So, I mean, that by putting that in statute, it means that we have got to do that. We'll be doing it the year prior to that transportation policy plan revision or update being done so that we can use that information and use that when we put together that update. I appreciate what you're saying, and Representative Nelson, you as well, and Representative Fiskins as well. I mean, I do think that is a very good point. I will be happy to work with Representative Hornstein and the others to find some language that makes you feel a little bit more comfortable. It's I can appreciate it. It looks a little bit different. Honestly, it's a good way for us to save some money. I think that we think the cost savings is somewhere around $150,000. And I know that that might not be enough to get that independent, objective view of how things are going. So let me take a shot at it and try to come bring something back here that makes everybody a little bit more comfortable. But for the most part, we're trying to do something that we feel is good. We think it's a good bill, and I'm happy to work something out with you guys.
And just to follow up, I think $150,000 is a small price to pay to get some real information about where we should be going in our transportation planning and functioning if we're not doing a good job. And keeping it in-house, because of the political structure of the Metropolitan Council, I don't think is going to provide us with the best information we can have to make decisions at the legislature about how much funding you need.
Representative Hornstein.
We have an additional witness.
Madam Chair, Amy Venowitz with the Metropolitan Council. Madam Chair, Representative Portman, I do want to make a couple additional statements about this section and kind of give you a picture of how our planning process works. I think, as Mr. Shetland said, to some degree, we feel that the word audit was maybe a little bit of a misnomer the first time this was passed. This legislation was passed in 1997 at a point where the legislature really wanted us to look at our transit system, our whole transportation system, and then take that information into our transportation policy plan and kind of develop the vision of where we want to go. Since that time, this report has gotten out of sync with our transportation policy plan. Under federal law, our policy plan, which is our big vision of where the region is going, used to be updated every 3 years. Now it's updated every 4 years. And so these reports have kind of gotten out of sync with each other. Under this section, what we're trying to do is the year before our transportation policy plan is updated, and that's the vision plan, this report will look at where are we today, not in terms of financial resources, but in terms of performance. It looks at our whole transportation system, where is the system at today in terms of its performance, congestion, travel time, a lot of factors that actually MnDOT, the data, is the one that collects quite a bit of the data that we produce in the report. Then the next year, we take that information into our visionary plan, our transportation policy plan, the 20-year plan. So we start with where are we at today, this report, and then the following year, update our visionary plan.
You're satisfied? Okay, never mind. Thank you. Any other questions? Anybody else to speak to this bill in the audience? Thank you, Mr. Van Adam. If you could identify yourself, and we do only have about another 5 minutes left to hear this.
Sure.
Thank you.
Very quick. Dave Van Adam, friend for Livable Communities. I just want to say a couple things about this audit. We've taken a very close look at it, the 2005 transportation audit. And if you haven't, I encourage you to take a very close look and see how it relates to the policy plan and other goals that have been set in statute. On the one hand, I think it's a fabulous, fabulous resource for all of us who are trying to investigate the impact of these investments. There's a tremendous amount of data in there. I think the shortfall is that in the executive summary, it's hard for me as a researcher to look at that and figure out exactly what the conclusion is and as it relates, again, to these specific policy goals. So I would really, Transit for Livable Communities would really support exploring the peer review possibility. And, in fact, we're right now working on a report with a national transit advocacy group that looks at many of these same issues, indicators, and we should have something out to the public in a couple of months, so it may not meet your timeline. But I do think the peer review is critical, and we again think the audit in general is a very useful document, but I think it does need some fine tuning in terms of what are the conclusions related to policy goals. So with that,
thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, I you know, worked closely with Mr. Van Hattem on other issues mm-hmm. as well as his organization, and I'm just really pleased that we have another partner to help us think through how best to address this question of the audit. So thank you, Mr. Van Hattem, and again, members, it's leaving a little more comfort that this can get adequately addressed.
I agree.
And any more questions? And Representative Hornstein, would you like to renew your motion?
I'd like to renew my motion to have House File 1159 pass as amended and re-referred to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill.
All right, all those members in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, then it passes. Our next meeting is March 21st at 2:15 in this building.
Madam Chair, did we do the minutes?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did, right before. All right, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.